Tonight's learning is dedicated to Lilo Nishmas Sima Rachel Bas Harav Aryeh Tzvi. This happens to be the mother of Mr. Aaron Friedman, who I must acknowledge is the one who started this Chumash here. He was the one who got this Chumash here going and started it, I think, over 4 years ago. So I have a lot of Akaras HaToiv to him and his family for getting this shir, Baruch Hashem, to continue through the difficult times and to continue through all the COVID and the lockdowns of Baruch Hashem. We continue to come every other week and discuss the parasha. So our learning tonight should be a schus for her yard site, which is coming up next week in Mitzvah Hashem. Although I never had the privilege of meeting her, I can only imagine the type of woman she was, knowing her son and Baruch Hashem, his beautiful family, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. What a beautiful Yiddish and Nachas that she was zeichet to produce. And together, Mr. Aaron Friedman, together with his wife, and you guys are just continuing to grow in learning, to value learning, to love learning, and you should only continue to see much Nachas from your children, and all the learning that we do here this evening should be an amazing aliyah for her neshama on the day of her yard site. Rabbi said, this evening we have the privilege of studying together Parsha Shmini. And Parsha Shmini, I believe, as we'll go through the Parsha together, and I urge you all on your own, when you learn the Parsha, whether it be Shnayim Mikra or reading it, or during laning, I urge you all to take a moment to realize how Parsha Shmini calls out to all of us in the time that we find ourselves right now. We find ourselves in the period of time between Pesach and Shavuos, but more than that, for many of us, we find ourselves in a period of mourning the loss of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva who died during this time. And we're mourning that loss. That's the Avelis of the days of the Sefira. And as we go through the parasha, I will point out to you, and there are many other places that you can realize on your own, how we're living at a time where we're trying to live through tragedy. The tragedy of losing 24,000 students, we can't even imagine what it would look like to lose that many Talmidei Chacham in such a small span of time. But as we'll learn even more in this week's parasha is the parasha of dealing with tragedy. Trying to cope, trying to manage, trying to balance tragedy in your life, whether it be private, individual, or communal. And we all live through tragedy. We're all living now in a year, Baruch Hashem, things are so much better than they were last year, and things have definitely picked up, and we're definitely in the right direction with vaccinations, and many people who have antibodies, and the like. But we all lived through a pandemic. We lived through a very difficult time. We lived through tragedy. And in Mitzvah Hashem, tonight we're going to see how in this week's parasha lies in it the key, the answer, perhaps the way to deal with tragedy in life. But let's just have an overall background of what to expect in this week's parasha, and then Billy Ned, we will get into some of the details. So in this week's parasha, Parasha Shmini, the Torah discusses a very, very important event, the inauguration of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is finally up and running and active and being productive in its role as the Mishkan. Then we have the difficult passing of Nadav Avihu, as well as the Avelos, the mourning or the lack of mourning, which is imposed on Aaron and his children. Then the Torah teaches us a prohibition of drinking wine and entering into the Beis HaMikdash. And then really the end of the parasha seems to be no connection really. The end of the parasha has to do with what we can eat and what we can't eat. Machalos Asuras. What animals are kosher, which animals are not kosher. And then the Torah really ends off the parasha discussing some rules of Tumah V'Tahara, some other rules and regulations regarding that. And that's really the sum of the parasha, and the main events in the parasha really hover around the Mishkan and the passing of Nadav Avihu. So let's go from the beginning of the parasha. Let's talk about the Mishkan. So just an interesting timeline. So just to put in perspective about the Mishkan. On Yud Aleph Tishrei, they were commanded on the building of the Mishkan. On Yud Beis and Yud Gimel Tishrei, the 2 days in that month, that's when they brought in all the donations for the Mishkan. On the 25th day of Kislev, the Mishkan was completely finished. So the entire building process was from the 13th, was from the beginning of Tishrei till Kislev, not so many months. But the Mishkan was not put up and was not active, and it was not used in a regular capacity until the first day of Nisan. So there was a large break from the end of Kislev. You have Teve, Shvat, Adar, three full months of really nothing going on. The Mishkan was completed,
But there was no inauguration, no opening day of the Mishkan. That did not happen to Aleph Nisan. And we've mentioned this in the past. I'm going to mention it just very quickly. The famous thought from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said, why the long delay? Why the long pause of 3 months? And he explained, because the Mishkan was supposed to be a kapar for the Chet Egel. And one of the colossal mistakes the Jewish people made in the Chet Egel was they were too quick in action without thinking thoroughly out their plans. Very often in life, when people make quick decisions, they don't think it out. They act too fast and they don't go slow and be methodical and thoughtful. And that's when they often make mistakes. So Hashem was saying, listen, you built the Mishkan of Chafei Kislev. It's finished. Great. Now wait. Wait. Relax. Don't be so quick and hurry. Wait. Wait till I tell you. Wait till it comes from me. Don't be so quick and so rushed and so hurried. Wait. Kechal Hashem Tziva, over and over, the Beis Halevi points out, over and over throughout the Mishkan, we keep on hearing the words the way Hashem commanded. Because the whole idea over here is, you're not acting on your own, you're acting in a commandment. When I tell you is when it's going to be ready, not when you're ready. That's why the Chet Egel, that was the flaw of the Chet Egel, and therefore the kapara for that was when Hashem said, I'm ready, now I'm ready on Aleph Nisan. So that's the inauguration, that was opening day, La Havdil, of the Mishkan, the first day where the Mishkan would be in its full capacity, fully functioning as a Mishkan, is going to take place on Aleph Nisan. And then from Aleph Nisan until the 12th of Nisan, those were the days where each one of the Nisim brought their respective Karbonos on one of those days. And we spoke about that in Halacha, about the reason why there's no Tachanun during those 12 days. So the Torah opens up with a very interesting word. The Torah opens up with the word Vayihi, and it was. So Gemara tells us in Maseches Megillah that we have a Masoravia tradition that the word Vayihi always connotates tsar. It always gives an impression of sadness. Vayihi always equals tsar. Now, before we get to the end of that Gemara, we'll just interject for a second. Why does the word Vayihi equal tsar? And it's interesting that the word Vayihi equals tsar. Why? What does Vayihi mean? Vayihi means and it was, which connotates the past. The past. What is the past? Why is the past negative? Because the past means I'm not looking to grow. I'm not looking to improve. It's over already. It's almost like a yiyush. It's like giving up. So that's why vayihi is it sounds like a lashon tsar, because it's already over. And that's why vayihi says the Gemara is lashon tsar. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean, Vayihi, over here, that there's something sad? The Gemara tells us that, the Medrash tells us that the day of Hey Aleph Nisan was such a joyous day, like the day the world was created. Hashem was more than thrilled to open up the Mishkan. So asks the Gemara Megillah, Daf Yud, so why does it open up with the Lashon Vayihi? And the Gemara answers, because Vayihi over here is a sad day. Why over here is it a sad day? Because of what's going to take place at the end of the day. At the end of the day, we are going to experience the passing of Nadav Avihu. And this is really, again, a very interesting thing in life, which sadly happens often, the balancing of emotions. On one hand, it's the happiest day of the year. It's the happiest day in history, the day, like Chazal tell us, like the day HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. But on the other hand, at the end of the day or midway through the day, Nadav Avihu dies, and therefore the day becomes a sad day. And this is the juggling act very often in our lives, is juggling different emotions. On one hand, we're joyous for one reason, and on the other hand, we're sad for another reason. Nebuch, people that have to sit Shiva when they're making chasanas for their children, it's a very difficult balancing act, emotionally speaking, to be able to juggle those two emotions. But the Gemara tells us that the Lashon Tsar overpowers the Simcha, and that's why this parasha opens up with a Vayihi, which connotates Tsar, because even though it was technically a joyous day, it was overcasted by the Tsar of the passing of Nadav Avihu. What is Vayihi Bayom HaShmini? It was the eighth day of what? So Rashi learns that it was the eighth day of the eighth day following the 7 days of the Miluim. What was the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim? So the Gemara says, Chazal tell us, that for 7 days towards the end of the month of Adar, they would take the Mishkan, they would open it up, build it, erect it, and then they would put it down. 7 days Moshe Rabbeinu did this, and on the eighth day, that was the day it stayed open. So that's why some people have a practice, they have a minhag, that they don't say Tachanun, I think the end of Adar, during the, what's called the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. Doesn't say in Shulchan Aruch not to say Tachanun those days, but some people have a minhag that they don't say Tachanun in the last week of Adar, because that was the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. So what was the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim? It almost sounds like it was practice, exhibition, getting ready for preseason, getting ready for the real Mishkan. So Moshe Rabbeinu every day would open the Mishkan, close the Mishkan, and like that. So there's an unbelievable Baal HaTurim. Amazing, amazing Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim says, what was the significance of this Shivas Yemei Hamlum? And he writes the following. He says, because for 7 days Moshe Rabbeinu refused HaKadosh Baruch Hu's request way back in Sefer Shmos to go lead the Jewish people. Therefore, says the Baal HaTurim, since for 7 days I hesitated, that's why I only got to work in the Mishkan 7 days. What does that mean? So the Mefarshim explained what the Baal HaTurim is saying is like this. Moshe Rabbeinu, every time he turned Hashem down, so it wasn't correct. It wasn't right. He really should have listened to Hashem and went right away. But why was Moshe Rabbeinu so hesitant to heed the call of leadership? It wasn't because Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of leadership. It wasn't because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to leave Midian. It wasn't because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't believe. It was because Moshe was worried about stepping on his brother's toes. Moshe Rabbeinu said to himself, it's not right. I'm going to stroll in out of Midian into Mitzrayim. And my older brother has been running the show for the last who knows how many years. He's been in charge, he's been the boss, he's been the gadol hador, and all of a sudden I'm going to walk in, hello, here I am, I'm switching over. He was worried about his brother's covet. Therefore says the Mefarshim, the Baal HaTurim is commenting that those 7 days, yes, it wasn't perhaps correct to turn down Hashem, but it was coming from a good place. He was worried about his brother's covet. Again, keep in mind, we're working in a time now in history where Shaloi Nogu Kovet Zelazeh, the reason for the departure, the reason for the passing of the Talmid Rav Akiva means they were not respectful of each other. Again, whatever that means, Lefi Madrega Sam, according to the Madrega, but there was a breach in concern for fellow Jew, and therefore it's very apropos in this week's Parsha that Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, Hashem, know why I did this. Therefore says the Baal HaTurim, that's a justifiable reason. And you know, for those 7 times, you actually got a reward, because really, Moshe Rabbeinu should have been the Kohen Gadol, but because he refused Hashem, he lost the Kohuna Gedolah. But for the 7 days, he got it. For the Shivas Yemei Hamluim, Moshe Rabbeinu did have a Kohen Gadol. You know why? Because he had a good reason for why he did it. He wasn't just doing it to push off Hashem. He wasn't doing it because he didn't want the responsibility. He was doing it because he was concerned. He was worried about how it would make his brother feel. And therefore Hashem said, I'm going to reward you with 7 days of service during the Shivas Yemei Hamluim. So what happens in the beginning of the parasha? It's on the 8th day, so Hashem kara Moshe la'aron ulvanov. He calls to Moshe and to Aaron, ulvanov and to his children, ulzikne Yisrael. Hashem sends out an email, and who's BCC'd on the email? Moshe, Aaron, and his sons, and zikne Yisrael. So we understand why Moshe was called. We understand why Aaron was called and his bonof. They are going to be inaugurated. They're going to be Moshuach. They're going to become Kohanim and Kohanim Gedor and Kohen Gadol. But why the Ziknei Yisrael there? What was the role of the Ziknei Yisrael, the elders? So Rashi tells us, do you know why the elders are there? Like Rashi, Lashmi'om shal pi adibur Aaron nichnas umishamesh b'kuhuna gedol. Says Rashi, do you know why the Ziknei Yisrael are there? They're there to bear witness that there was no nepotism taking place over here. You can imagine the Bnei Yisrael will say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the Gadol Hador, you're the leader, and oh, isn't that convenient? Your brother is the next highest position that's available. Wow, that seems too convenient. Therefore, says Rashi, the Ziknei Yisrael were there to relay the message to the Jewish people. That's not the way it went down. This wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu giving out jobs to his family, personal kickbacks like we see sadly in the political world that we live in today. No, this was Me'eis HaKadosh Baruch. So the Sifsei Chachamim asks, he says, but we knew this already. There's a Pasuk in Perek Ches, Pasuk Hei, in Parsha Tzav, the Parsha right before this, the Torah tells us that Vayomer Moshe Aleinu, Zeh HaDavar Asher Tziva Hashem La'asos. Moshe tells the people, this is not coming from me, this is the word of Hashem. And therefore says the Sifsei Chachamim, why do we need it again? So the Sifsei Chachamim has an entire answer that maybe over there, that was only the appointing of Aaron to be a Kohen. But to make Aaron a Kohen Gadol, that's a much higher job. So that you needed to make a disclaimer that there was a nepotism. Reb Steinman is bothered with the fact that how does this disprove nepotism? The fact that the Ziknei Yisrael, maybe the Ziknei Yisrael were in on it also. Maybe they were also in on it. So what's the raya? So therefore, he disagrees with the whole idea. But I saw a beautiful pshat from Yosef Nechemya Kornitzer. And Yosef Nechemya Kornitzer reads Rashi slightly differently. He reads Rashi like this. We all know that Moshe and Aaron were very different brothers. Both great people, great gedolim, and great leaders, but they were different. Aaron was the Oyev Shalom. Aaron had the ability to make peace between two people, between two enemies, between husband and wife. Aaron was known. His character trait was Aaron Oyev Shalom.
he loved peace, and he was able to bring peace to many different people. So therefore, says Yosef the Chemir Kornitzer, Rashi is saying like this, Ulezignei Yisrael hashmiyam sh'al pi hadibur Aaron nichnas. Do you know why Aaron was chosen? It was because al pi hadibur, because the way he spoke. Do you know why Aaron merited to become the Kohen Gadol? Not because of the nepotism of Moshe Rabbeinu, but because al pi hadibur, the way he spoke, his ability to bring peace between two people, that's why he merited to be the Kohen Gadol. It wasn't any other reason. The godless of Aaron, the godless of that role and that job as Kohen Gadol, was the ability to do al pi hadibur, was his ability to use dibur, speech. Speech is a very powerful tool. When you speak properly, you can make people feel good about themselves, you can bring people together, you can unify groups. And therefore, says in Yosef Nechemiah, that's why Aaron was chosen. He was chosen because of his dibur, his ability to speak, to help, to bring people closer together. But we must mention, although we mentioned it in previous years, this medrash is a must mention medrash in this week's parasha. It's so, so beautiful and so essential. The medrash says that Klal Yisrael are compared to birds. And listen to the words of the medrash, because again, I guarantee you one day you'll use this medrash in a speech, perhaps, and it's really a life lesson for all of us. Says the Medrash, why are the Jewish people compared to a bird? Says the Medrash, Ma oif einei, and it's not just because the birds fly south to Florida, like the Jews all went for Pesach to Florida. That's not why we're compared to birds. Says the Medrash, Ma oif einei pereach, beloi kinofov. Says the Medrash, a bird cannot fly without its wings. Af Yisrael, so to the Jewish people, and Yecholim Lasais Davar, we can't do anything B'li Zikenim, without our elderly. Says the Medrash, you know why the Ziknei Yisrael were at this meeting? Not like Rashi, because it was to prove no nepotism. It's because any time there's a major event, there's a major stepping stone, there's a major experience, we need our elderly to be there. We need them to be involved. We need them to be there. We need them to take a stand. We need them to give advice. They are essential to the growth and the development of Klal Yisrael. But points out Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, look at the words of the Medrash. Ein yecholim la'aseis davar. We can't do anything. Zero. We go nowhere. We move nowhere. We can't take a step. Just like a bird can't go anywhere without his wings. We can't go anywhere without the advice and the haskama and the input of our zakenim. And it's obvious that this is a lost art today. Sadly, today in the world we live in, the secular world, the older you get, the less cool you become, and the less involved you become, and the less people acknowledge or value what you have to say. People are retiring, those that are getting older, because they feel that they're not with it, and they're not able to meet the demand and the needs of the younger generation. Obviously, there are certain things that the elderly don't have compared to the new generation, but they don't lose their advice and their ability to know and to see, and their experience that they have, which is so rich and valuable. There's nothing like experience that those that have been around a long time have. Look in Klal Yisrael, who do we turn to when we don't know what to do? We don't just turn to the biggest Talmidei Chachamim. We turn to those that are elderly Talmidei Chachamim, because they've seen it, they've been around, they've been exposed to great people, they saw great people. And the Medrash is telling us we need to turn to our Zakenim. We need to look at our leaders. We need to look at our great elderly people, whether it be Talmidei Chacham and or those that are just elderly, have been around a long time, seen a lot of miracles, seen a lot of Yad Hashem. We need to turn to them more, to listen to them, to gain from them. I always urge my Talmidim, I happen to enjoy history, but if you want to gain a lot, speak to grandparents. If you're lucky enough to have great grandparents, speak, talk to them, hear their life, see what they have to say. We pushed this a lot before Pesach at the Seder. Give over to the next generation what life was like when you were a kid. Teach them, educate them, explain to them, let them see a world that was. I don't only mean Holocaust survivors, I mean everyone and anyone that lived a different life than we're living today in 2021. You lived a different life, you have experiences, you perhaps saw great people, you perhaps lived through difficult times in life. Give it over, share. And we as the next generation have an obligation to listen, to hear, to gain, and to grow from the previous generation. So the Torah continues, and it talks about the karbonos that Aaron is supposed to prep for. The pasuk tells us that he has to bring, again, I spoke about this in the last year or 2 years ago, it's up online. I'm not going to get into all the details of Aaron's carbon, which corresponded to Aaron's role in Chet HaEgel. Take a listen, it's on YouTube, you can hear what exactly was Aaron's role in the Chet HaEgel, and therefore understanding which carbon Aaron needed to bring. But I want to focus on a Targum Yonason ben Oziel on Pasuk Gimel. The pasuk says that the Bnei Yisrael had to bring a carbon, and their carbon was made up of a Seir Izim Lechatos, a goat. Seir Izim. And the Targum Yonason ben Oziel says, do you know why the Jewish people needed a Seir Izim? To be Mechaper on the Mechiras Yosef. The purpose of this goat being brought on this day in Jewish history, on Aleph Nisan, Yom HaKamas HaMishkan, was why? Was to be Mechaper on the selling and the whole altercation between Yosef and his brothers. And the obvious question is, why now? Why is now Aleph Nisan, the day where the Mishkan is going up, why is now the right day for us to need to focus on this event in history? We perhaps would like to block that event down and make believe it didn't happen. But why now is the time to need Slicha V'Kapara from it? So we mentioned last year, Alom D'Shep Shah from the Meshech Chacham, but I just want to mention two other Pshatim, which again connects to the time that we're living in. One Pshat is that this was a very joyous time. We mentioned earlier, Chazal tell us that this was as much Simcha as the day the world was created. Very often when Klai Yisrael is in a happy place, that's when Klai Yisrael often starts to veer off and starts to split. As long as Klai Yisrael is in a bad place, we're being beaten by the Mitzrayim, we're being beaten by the Mitzrayim, we're suffering, we're being oppressed by the Nazis, then Klai Yisrael often comes together. But the moment we see freedom, the moment life gets better, the moment the tide turns, and life is on the uptick side, all of a sudden we start to have splits and differentiations. And this is a vort from the Meshech Chachma about Kriyas Yamsuf. Chazal tell us that when we came to Kriyas Yamsuf, the Malachim Tainan, Halalu Avdei Avodah Zarah, Halalu Avdei Avodah Zarah. The Jews worship Avodah Zarah, and the Mitzrayim worship Avodah Zarah. Why should I split for the Jewish people? So the Meshech Chachma asks, he says, I don't understand. The Meshech Chachma asks it, like Yitzchak Berditchev asks it, the Ketush Slavi. Why now? Why didn't someone tie this by the Eser Makas? Why didn't the Malachim tie this by Tzias Mitzrayim, by Makas Bechayrus? All of a sudden now you have a taina of Alol Uev De'Azor. So he explains beautifully both the Meshech Chacham and the Gedushas Levi, because until they got to Kriyas Yamsuf, there was no period. Until Klai Yisrael got to Kriyas Yamsuf, we were all on the same page, we all agreed. When we got to Kriyas Yamsuf, all of a sudden the vision reared its ugly head. There were four kitas, there were four groups fighting, deciding how exactly to deal with the Yamsuf. Says the Meshech Chacham, the moment where we lose our achdus, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu digs up our previous flaws. As long as we're unified, as long as we're together, Hashem is willing to overlook. But why at Kriyas Yamsuf? Because that's when things got really good for us. When Klai Yisrael is in a good place, we're not being oppressed, that's when we start to veer off into our separate ways. So perhaps at the time of the Mishkan was such a joyous time, Hashem was reminding everyone, be careful, don't allow Pirut, just like Yosef and his brother split, I don't want you guys now to either think about splitting, dividing, fighting, and doing your own thing. The other pshat is that the Mishkan really can create a lot of animosity. You come into the Mishkan, you see Aaron and his children have this job, and Moshe and his family is this, and the Kohanim are this, and I'm a nobody. It easily leads to animosity. It can easily lead someone to say, why are you better than me? Why do you get to work in the Mishkan? Because I don't get to work in the Mishkan. So that's why specifically now, at this time, we have to remind ourselves, let's not get caught up in the petty fights. We're all children of Hashem, we all have purposes. Let's not allow our differences to divide us. And I think we find this idea again in the parasha. If you continue on in the parasha and Pasuk Yud, Pasuk Zayin, the Pasuk says, Pasuk Vav. Moshe says, "Zeh hadavar hashetziv Hashem tasu. This is the thing Hashem commanded you to do." What's the zeh hadavar? So there's an unbelievable medrash. The medrash says, "Zeh hadavar yetzahara heviru melibchem." Moshe Rabbeinu was giving the Jews an unbelievable piece of advice. You got to get rid of the yetzahara. You got to rid yourself from the yetzahara. V'tihu kulchem biyira achas, and you should all be unified in fearing Hashem. So everyone wants to know, what is the Yetzer Hara for what? Which Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer Hara for money, the Yetzer Hara for taiva, the Yetzer Hara for stealing, the Yetzer Hara for what? What Yetzer Hara? So in the Medrash Sefer that I have in my house, they put in parentheses, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Okay? So Moshe Rabbeinu was referring to the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. But the Chiddush Yarim, the Ger Rebbe, he says, no, it was the Yetzer Hara of Sinas Chinam. Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, listen guys, you gotta rid yourselves of this. This what? This Sinas Chinam problem. We can't have baseless, unnecessary fights and quarrels. And this works out very nice with the Tagim Yonis and Azil we mentioned earlier. Now is the time we gotta conquer. Now is the time we have to put the rest Sinas Chinam. Now needs to be the time we fix Sinas Chinam. And again, where do we find ourselves right now? In a time where Meisu Tamidei Rakiva Shlonogu Kovet Zelazer, we're holding right now at a time where this was a big problem for the Jewish people. So this week's parasha, again and again, is talking to us. It's reflecting to us the importance and the significance of how to improve on our Ben Adam Lechavei. But Rav Moshe Shtemach has a different idea. Rav Moshe Shtemach says that he's giving advice. Moshe's advice to the Jewish people is, you all feel very connected to Hashem right now. You feel dovuk to Hashem. Don't think that that dveikus replaces mitzvahs. Very often you find people, even in the world today, they feel that, they'll tell you they're very connected to Hashem. They feel Hashem. They walk with Hashem. But they don't keep Torah mitzvahs. But they feel connected to Hashem. That's dveikus is meaningless. That's meaningless to say, I feel connected to Hashem, but I don't keep his Torah mitzvahs. Says Rav Moshe Shtemach, don't walk away from this experience and say to yourself, you know, I felt Hashem's presence. Excuse me. I was in Hashem's house. And therefore, you know, I can do what I want. No. Dveikus b'Hashem doesn't pant you, doesn't exempt you from doing his mitzvahs and learning his Torah. Very often we live in a world today where everyone's seeking ways to feel close to Hashem. Whether it be a kumzitz, or whether it be other means and modes of connecting to Hashem. Someone told me something which was very troubling. He knows of a group of people that every Friday night they get together to have a meaningful Kabbalah Shabbos, and they all get high first. They all smoke up marijuana. Maybe now it's legal in certain states. And that's how they go into Shabbos. That's not real Dveikus b'Hashem. That's fake Dveikus b'Hashem. Real Dveikus b'Hashem is really connecting to Hashem through his Torah, through his mitzvahs, and feeling he's part of your life. That's not a real Dveikus b'Hashem. And you meet these people and they'll tell you they're so connected, they're so in one with Hashem, but they don't keep his Torah, they don't do his mitzvahs. That's not Dveikus. Says in Moshe Shtemach, you want to have real Dveikus b'Hashem, don't think that Dveikus represents... I'm sorry, don't think that Dveikus replaces the obligation to learn Torah and to keep Hashem's mitzvahs. Then the Pasuk continues, and the Pasuk tells us, Pasuk Zayin, Vayomer Moshe al Aaron. Moshe says to Aaron, Krav al Mizbeach, come close to the Mizbeach and do the kabbanas that you were supposed to do. So Rashi quotes the Medrash that why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to repeat the original commandment to Aaron? Aaron heard it the first time. So Rashi tells us, Shaya Aaron boish viyore logeshes. Aaron was embarrassed and afraid to come close. He saw, the Medrash tells us that the Satan made an eagle appear on the Mizbeach, so he would look, it looks like it was an eagle, and Aaron felt boish. Listen to the Lashon of Rashi one more time. Boish viyore. Embarrassed and afraid. Omalei Moshe, Moshe says back to him, Lo ma'ata boish. Why are you embarrassed? Lekach nivcharta. For this, you were chosen. So the Chedush, the Sfasemes, back to the Ger family. Sfasemes, the grandson of the Chedush Erim, who was actually raised by the Chedush Erim after he was orphaned by both of his parents, says the Sfasemes, Rashi is teaching us that there are two great traits that Jews should have. One is busha, be embarrassed. One is fear. These are two fantastic midas that a Jew should have. But as the Sfasemes, but they shouldn't prevent you from doing mitzvahs. Don't say, oh, I'm too embarrassed to ask a question. I'm too embarrassed to ask a shayla. I'm too embarrassed to ask, will someone learn with me? Or I'm too afraid of what the answer will be. I'm too afraid that the Rav will make fun of me. Or I'm too afraid that my Rebbe will not answer me. They're good midas, but not if they stop you from doing what you're supposed to do. So what exactly was the answer of Moshe Rabbeinu l'kach nevchata? So we've said this pshat many times from the Arizal. The Arizal said, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Aaron, because you feel uncomfortable taking this position, because you feel embarrassment and fear, that means you have the proper feelings. When you have the proper feelings, that's exactly why you were chosen for the job. L'kach nevchata, you know why you were chosen? Because you're boish and you have yira.
Many people don't feel these feelings. They're not embarrassed. They don't have fear. They just live life without thinking. But because you're thinking and you're emotionally connected to what you do, that's why you were chosen. And we mentioned this story many times. The story with Menachem Partovich. When Menachem Partovich went to Talking and Learning with the Brisker Rav, and Reb Shach was there. And they saw that Reb Nachum was shaking. He was so scared. And afterwards, Reb Shach asked the Brisker Rav, why was he so scared to talk to you? He said such good Torah. So his answer was, that's why he said such good Torah. Because he was scared. He felt a certain yira. He felt a pachad. He felt an awe in front of someone that was greater. And therefore, he acted appropriately. And that's why he became a big gadol. We live in a generation today. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about this more later on in the parasha with Nadav Aviu. But people don't have any respect for great people, great gedolim. We have great leaders and great gedolim. They're nobody. I'm just like them. Okay, he learned a little bit more than me. He knows a little bit more than me. No, we have to have an awe. And we have to have a boish v'yira. We have to feel a sense of I'm not them. They're better than me. They're different than me. They're closer to Hashem. It's a little bit of a lost art today for many people. Okay, the Torah continues. We're going to fast forward a little bit because we have a lot to get to this evening. And so after Aaron finishes his entire avodah, it says Vayisa pasuk chav beis Vayisa Aaron es yadav el ha'am. Aaron lifts his hands up to the people of Vayivarechem and he blesses them. So there's a very interesting Rashi. Rashi says he blesses them birchas kohanim, yivarechcha yoer yisa. It's almost like Rashi needs to tell us what birchas kohanim is, as if we're not familiar with birchas kohanim. So Rashi says, well, you know what Aaron did? He did birchas kohanim. So Reb Shteinman in his Sefer Yoel Seshachar has two interesting ha'aras on this statement. He says, first of all, there's a Torah, which is brought down the halacha, that you should always try to have more than one kohen menduchnik. Sometimes you don't have the flexibility or that availability, but a person should try. So he says over here, it was just Aaron duchnik by himself. That's one ha'ara that he has. He has another ha'ara that, what bracha did Aaron use when he duchnik? We know today the kohanim say, shel b'kedushasei shel Aaron. Did Aaron say that, or did he change the text? There's a whole discussion of what nusach ha'bracha did he use. But I think based on the Yisoy from Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Har Tzvi, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank says, no. Moshe Rabbeinu's duchening over here wasn't duchening as Birchas Kohanim. This was his own independent bracha. This was aside from the regular, typical, run-of-the-mill mitzvah of duchening. And he says, I'll prove it to you. Because it says in Rashi, Birchas Kehanim, Yivarechcha Yor Yisa. Frek Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, why did Rashi have to tell me what Birchas Kehanim is? Says Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, because this wasn't typical Birchas Kehanim. This was Aaron's personal decision to decide to bless the Jewish people, irrelevant to his mitzvah of Tuchening. And Grada, what he used, what happened to have been Yivarechcha Hashem, Yor and Yisa. So if you go like this, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, it would answer up the kashas of Reb Shteinman. But in any case, Reb Moshe Shtemich makes an interesting observation. What does the pasuk say right after Aaron lifted up his hands? He came down from doing the chatos and the shlomim. And Sternbach points out that there's a strong correlation between avodah and duchening, because it says that the duchening took place right after the avodah. So he sees there's a connection between avodah and duchening. And he wants to say something very, very mechudash, I think. Right, we know that in Chutz La'aretz, we do not duchen every single day like in Eretz Yisrael. We only duchen on the Yom Tovim. Why is that the practice? So there are many, many answers given in Mishainim. Many different times in history, there are those who wanted to abolish that. They wanted to start duchening every single day, and things came up that did not allow it. And they took that as a sign. The Aruch HaShulchan writes like this. They took that as a sign is that we should not change the practice. But the practice here in Chutz La'aretz is we only duchen on Yom Tovim. So Moshe Shtemach wanted to say a pshat. He said, the reason is because from the fact that the Torah connects duchening to avoida, that means duchening can only be done when there's avoida. What's avoida tefillah? And he says, again, this is his words, not mine, that in Chutz La'aretz, we struggle with good davening. Good davening means a davening with kavon. And he thinks that we only have that on Yom Tov. During the week, we don't have davening b'kavon. We don't daven properly. And if the davening is not a proper davening, then you can't duchen. And therefore, he wants to suggest maybe that's why in Chutz La'aretz, we don't merit to have a duchening every single day, only on Yom Tovim, because there's something lacking in our avoda, in our davening. His lashon is that we daven without kavana. Again, maybe others would interject their own pshat, and maybe we're too much on our phone, and we're doing other things during davening. But whatever the case may be, his pshat is that there's a breach in our davening, and due to the fact that our davening is lacking, that's why we're not permitted to duchen every single day. But the next pasuk I want to get to is the pasuk following this is pasuk Chof Gimel, a very, very important pasuk. Pasuk tells us, Now Moshe and Aaron both come together to the Ohel Moed. Vayetsu, when they go out, Vayivorchu Esa'am, and they bless the people. Vayirah Kavod Hashem El Kolam, and the honor of Hashem is shown to the people. So Rashi brings down over here in a second shot an unbelievable conversation between Moshe and Aaron. Rashi says, Kevin Shiro Aaron Shakarvu Kol HaKarbonos. Aaron's watching what's taking place. He realizes that he brought all the karbonos that he was asked to bring. V'nasu Kol HaMaisim. He did everything he was supposed to do, but V'layodo Shechina LiYisrael. But the Shechina didn't come down. It seems like the Mishkan was not really activated. It seems like whatever he did was not getting the point, was not accomplishing what it was supposed to accomplish. Hoya Mitztayer. It caused Aaron unbelievable pain. V'amar, and he said, Yodei ani, I know shekoas HaKadosh Baruch Hu alai. I know Hashem is mad at me. U'bishvili, and because of me, lo yorda shechina l'Yisrael. That's why the shechina is not going down. So right away, we learn from Aaron HaKohen an unbelievable sense of achrayus. Aaron didn't blame someone else. Aaron didn't say it's Moshe's fault, it's B'nai Yisrael's fault, it's Hashem's fault. Aaron looked inward and said, it's my fault. From all the people Aaron could have blamed, most of us would have not blamed ourselves. We would have blamed someone else. It's society's fault. It's the Rebbe's fault. It's my school's fault. It's my parents' fault. It's my friend's fault. It's never, ever my fault. Very often in life, we never want to look inwards and blame ourselves. Here, Aaron HaKohen says, no, it's my fault. No questions. I know it's about me. I know it's my shortcomings that are causing the Shechina not to come down. That already is an unbelievable testimonial to who Aaron was. But it gets better, says Rashi. What happens? Omar Loi LeMoshe, he says to his brother Moshe, Moshe Achi, Moshe, my brother, Kacha Sisili, this is what you did to me? Shenichnasti v'nisbashti? He says to Moshe, listen, Moshe, I get it, it's my fault. So why'd you put me through all this? You made me come to the Mishkan, do all these things, so I should just look foolish? That nothing is being accepted by Hashem? Says Rashi, Miyad nichnas Moshe, immediately Moshe comes with him. Ubikshu rachamim, they seek mercy from Hashem. The yorda shechina liyisrael, and the shechina comes down. What a unique conversation between Moshe and Aaron and Moshe. Aaron says to his brother, was this all to embarrass me? And immediately they come together and everything is safe. Says Reb Henoch Leibowitz in the Sefer Chedushei Lev, you see from this Rashi that Aaron had a taina. Aaron had a taina to Moshe. Why'd you put me through this embarrassment? Frekta Reb Henoch, what do you want from Moshe Rabbeinu? He didn't do it. Moshe Rabbeinu was merely an agent of Hashem following orders. Why are you getting angry at Moshe Rabbeinu? Says Reb Henoch Leibowitz, we see from this Rashi a very important message in life, that when it comes to embarrassing someone, even if it's only a gram, even if it's indirect, you need to distance yourself from indirect embarrassment also. The moment Moshe Rabbeinu heard he caused indirect embarrassment, he jumped up and said, let's fix it. Moshe Rabbeinu said, what do you want from my life? It wasn't my orders. I was just following, relaying what Hashem said. Says Rav Henoch Leibowitz, we learn from over here that if you do an action that can cause even only indirect embarrassment, you have to fix the situation immediately. And right away, Moshe Rabbeinu got up and he davened to fix the situation. Reb Shimshon Pinkus points out over here that the reason why the Mishkan couldn't function until this last step of it was because the Mishkan needed tefillah. The Bikshu Rachman was davening. The Koyach HaTefillah is so strong that the Mishkan would not be able to properly function until there was tefillah injected into the Mishkan. So that's the first major chapter of discussion in this week's Parsha. And then we really switch gears and we start to talk about the other chapter. Now, remember the backdrop of events over here. It's all the same day. It's all Aleph Nisan. There's festivity. You have to understand. Put yourself in the B'nai Yisrael's shoes. They've been waiting 3 months for this Mishkan to go up. Not just for a Mishkan, but because the Mishkan signaled the forgiveness of the Chet Egel, which was over their heads like you can't imagine. They were waiting day after day. When will they finally obtain the Slicha V'Kapara? When will Hashem overlook, so to say, or forgive, or allow them to move on from that terrible, terrible story? And then the day finally came, Aleph Nisan, they're waiting, and it doesn't happen right away. And finally, Moshe and Aaron daven. Boom, the Shechina comes down, Hashem accepts it. You can only picture, you can only imagine the festivities, the feeling of joy, not only for Moshe and Aaron, but for the entire Jewish people. This was the new era, this was the future of life, post Chet HaEgel. And in moments, the entire mood changes. With all of a sudden, the Pasuk tells us that the fire comes out, and it consumes on the Mizbech, which is great. Everyone's excited. And then we come to Perek Yud Aleph. Nadav v'Avihu, who the children of Aaron, take a frying pan, v'yidnu b'am'esh, they put it in fire, and they give their makriv an esh zara, and all of a sudden a fire comes and kills them. Boom! A middle of the joyous experience, tragedy strikes with the passing of Nadav v'Avihu. So before we even get into trying to explain the story of Nadav v'Avihu, we must put a disclaimer. Nadav v'Avihu were great people. Unbelievable gedolim. More chashiv perhaps than even Yeshua. Medrash says that they should have been the ones to lead the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. The Zayir HaKadosh says that if anyone cries over the loss of Nadav v'Avihu, Meichel na'avei noisim. Nadav v'Avihu were not what we think of today. So whatever pshatim we're going to say tonight, and whatever ideas we're going to quote from Chazal and from the Mefarshim, but you got to keep in mind, we're not talking about regular people. We're talking about very, very great and very special people that are very much beloved in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch. So we just need to be careful on how we talk about their shortcomings and their flaws. But we need to work with what Chazal tell us. Chazal tell us many different reasons for why Nadav v'Avihu deserved this punishment. They did whatever they did wrong. So we'll start off with Rashi. Rashi quotes from Chazal, Gemara, and Irvin, different opinions of what exactly did Nadav v'Avihu do so wrong that they were deserving of death. So Rashi says that their mistake was they were Meira Halacha b'fnei Moshe Rabban. They paskin the Shaila without first consulting with Moshe the Rebbe. That was one mistake. Rabbi Shmuel says the mistake was that they went into the Beis HaMikdash while they drank wine. And he says, I'll prove it to you, because right after this story is when the Torah gives an Isser to drink wine. So those are the two classical answers. There's one last pshat, which I want to focus on for a second, which is that they never got married. That the Taina on Nadav v'Avihu, what they did wrong was they never got married. The Balaturim writes over here on the word Balaturim writes on the word Vatoichal Oisam, and the fire consumed them, and the word Oisam is spelled with an extra, with a Vav. He says, because the Vav is big, I'm sorry, Oisam writes, he says, it has a Vav there to teach you the six sins they did wrong. One was Eish Zara, foreign fire. Mayra Halacha B'fnei Rabban, they drank wine, they didn't have kids. Nosnu Einem B'Parnassus, which, okay, and Loin Notlu Eitz, they didn't take advice from each other. So they did six things wrong. But I want to talk about the three that we mentioned earlier. We mentioned that they did three things wrong. What were the three things they did wrong? They were Meira Halacha B'fnei Rabban, they passed on the Shaila in front of Moshe without asking Moshe. They drank wine and they never got married. Says the Chassam Sofer that these three things on the base level seem to have no connection one to the other. They seem to be three irrelevant, not intertwined violations that happen to have all been violated by these two people. But says the Chassam Sofer, it's not so. Says the Chassam Sofer, there is a common theme and common denominator between all three of these variations. He explains like this, and it's a very important idea for life. He says, let's start off with the fact that they never got married. Says the Chassam Sofer, when a person does not get married, and he does not have a spouse, and he doesn't have children, he will never properly understand how to honor a Rebbe, or for that matter, how to honor Hashem. As we mentioned many times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us people in this world that we should honor to teach us how to honor Him. By honoring your parents, by honoring your Rebbeim, it helps you learn how to honor Hashem. Says the Chassam Sofer, if you do not have children of your own, and you don't have a spouse of your own, and you don't realize how you want them to treat you, and therefore learning how you should treat your parents, you will not be able to be a proper Oved Hashem, and you will not have the proper cover for your Rebbeim. Therefore, says the Chassam Sofer, from the fact that they never got married, they never learned that proper sensitivity towards Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore they were Meir Halacha B'fnei Rabban. But even more than that, they never learned proper etiquette and proper respect for the Makam HaMikdash, because they never learned that certain things are very, very special. A person learns that his Rebbe is special, his parents are special, special people you act differently to. You don't say what you want to them. You don't do what you want to them. Same thing with the Mishkan. The Mishkan is a special building. You don't just have a drink and then go into the Mishkan. Therefore, says the Chassam Sofer, these three things were all of a byproduct. They were all a toitzah from the fact that they never got married and they never had children. They never realized how to properly respect another person and how to properly and to see the respect they expect from their children and therefore give it to their parents as well. Rav Moshe Bick has a different idea. Rav Moshe Bick says that the mistake over here that they made was they forgot how to get close to Hashem. The Gemara tells us the way you get close to Hashem is by connecting to Talmid Chachamim. They felt that they're going to go a different route to connect to Hashem. Meira Halacha B'fnei Rabban meant that they don't need Moshe Rabbeinu to connect to Hashem. And that was the mistake. Says Rebik, they thought that they're going to get close to Hashem on their own, but Gemara told us how you get close to Hashem. The way you get close to Hashem is being associated with Talmidei Chachamim, man Gedor, or if Talmidei Chachamim do business with Talmidei Chachamim. Talmidei Chachamim are our key towards getting close to Hashem, and therefore the mistake was they veered off of that path. But Ramay Shebek has an unbelievable mahalach in this story, because there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Nadav, I believe it's in Sanhedrin, could be I'm wrong, that Nadav v'Avihu were once walking, and they saw Moshe walking, and Moshe and Aaron, they said, we can't wait till these Zakenim die, and we'll take over the leadership over here. So obviously on the face value, that sounds like a very, very disturbing comment to be said from Nadav v'Avihu. But says Moshe Bik, what were they really saying? And he explains that Moshe and Aaron and Nadav v'Avihu disagreed hashkafically. They disagreed on how to lead the Jewish people. Moshe and Aaron led the Jewish people with rachmanis, compassion. Nadav v'Avihu felt that's not the way to lead the people. You know the way you lead the people is with being a captain, being tough with them, not being loving and merciful and compassionate. He thought that's not the way to lead the people. You want to lead the mass? Nadav v'Avihu thought that the way you lead the people is by being tough with them. And he says, I'll prove it to you, says Rav Moshe Bik. What was the lashon of the Gemara? He called Moshe and Aaron Zakenim. Why do you call them old? He says, because a Zaken is known for his compassion. Elderly people have much more compassion than the youth. So his knock on Moshe and Aaron was that I can't wait to take over and I am going to fundamentally change the way the Jewish people are led. Because until now they're being led under your banner of compassion. I'm going to change it and I'm going to lead them under kaptonis. And he says, that was the Meir Halacha Mifnei Rabban. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu, where did they pasken a Shaila without? They pasken how to lead the Jewish people. That was the Psak. And he says, Lefizeh, we can understand a few Psukim later, the Torah tells us that Hashem gave a Tzivoy for the Jewish people to cry over Nadav v'Avihu. So many people ask, why did there need to be a specific Tzivoy to cry over Nadav v'Avihu? So Moshe Rabbeinu says beautifully, because the Jewish people didn't feel any great love to Nadav v'Avihu. Nadav v'Avihu was a captain. They were tough with the people. It wasn't like Moshe and Aaron who were loving, compassionate, caring. Nadav v'Avihu were a letter of the law, tough. Therefore, why would the Jewish people cry over their mourning? What loss was there? So Hashem had to give them a tzivoy that they have to cry. That's a very nice pshat from Rav Moshe Bik. The Ben Yehuda explains that there are numerous reasons to why Nadav v'Avihu died. And he explains that the fact that he was Meir Halacha Mifnei Rabban, that was why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't save him. I mean, from all the other Aveiras, Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps could have pulled some strings and could have saved him. But the moment he was Meir Halacha Mifnei Rabban, he lost even that. From the fact that he lost, he was Mevazeh his Rebbe, he was Mevazeh the role of Talmidei Chachamim, that now ensured that nothing else will be able to forgive his other sins, and ultimately that will take his life. A fellow once came to the Chassam Sofer. Looked like a Nebuch, a beggar, a poor person. He came to the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer wrote him a letter of Haskama to Uda, that he can go collecting because he's poor. And the Chassam Sofer led the man out of his house, and there was like a smile on the Chassam Sofer's face. So one of the Talmidim asked the Chassam Sofer, Rebbe, what are you so happy about? He said, because my Rebbe's comment came true. Many years earlier, the Chassam Sofer was a student by Reb Nosson Adler, and there were many people that spoke very ill of Reb Nosson Adler. They said not nice things to him. They spoke very, very disrespectful of him. And the Chassam Sofer asked his Rebbe, he said, Reb Nosson Adler, Rebbe, what's going to happen to all these people that are mevazeh you? He says, don't worry. I guarantee you all of these people that are mevazeh me now, they'll all come one day to you. They're all going to become aniyim, and they're going to need to go around collecting. And the Chassam Sofer watched all of the people that he remembered that were disrespectful to his Rebbe, one after the other, it happened. But there was one guy left that never yet became poor. He never yet needed to become an ani. The Chassam Sofer was very troubled, but my Rebbe said it's going to happen. And this was the final person. This last ani was finally the last one who disrespected Reb Nosson Adler, and he too found a similar fate as the other ones, he became an aniyim. We have to be careful. We have to be so careful how we speak of gedolim, how we speak of leaders. I'm not saying you have to agree with every psak they say. I'm not saying you have to follow them. They're not your Rebbe, but we have no permission whatsoever to speak ill, to speak down of, to disrespect, to be chutzpahdik to gedolim. That's totally uncalled for. It's totally the opposite of Jewish value. We have to be so, so careful how we talk to people, especially gedolim. It's a pachad neira. I mentioned this story last time, and I'll repeat it again because I think it brings home a very important point. There was a Rav, his name was Reb Leibish Mintz. He was a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer, big Talmud Chacham, well respected, he had a kehillah. And one day someone started a rumor about him that he went to a secular college. And it wasn't true, he didn't go to secular college. But that's how rumors go. Once the rumor starts, it spreads like wildfire. And it his kehillah, his shul, his congregation, they had absolutely no respect for him. They wouldn't bring him any shilas. They wouldn't let him say shurim. They didn't treat him like a rab because they felt he was trafe because he went to secular college. So when it came Rosh Hashanah time, he went up to the Bima to be the Baal Makre. And they said, you can't be the Baal Makre. You went to secular college, you're trafe. You can't be the one to call out the Kriya. And one of the Baal Batim got up and smacked the rabbi across the face with Nei in front of the entire congregation. And the name of this town where Reb Leibish Mintz was the Rav was Auschwitz, Poland. We have to be so careful how we treat Rabbonim, Rabbeim, Rosh Yeshivas, Gedolim. Again, I'm not saying you have to take everything they say and follow it halacha l'maaseh. If they're not your Rabbeim, you don't have to. But to be disrespectful, we have absolutely no permission. We have no right to say, oh, that Gadol's crazy. That what that Gadol said is ridiculous. He's a fool. We have absolutely no permission to talk about people like that. It's not our job, it's not our place, and nothing good ever comes from it. When we disrespect Gedolim, as we saw from Nelson Adler, as we saw from B'lei B'shmins, nothing good comes out of it. We have to be so, so careful. Again, it's easy to fall into the trap, to start labeling, and to start bashing, and to start name-calling. He said this, we just have to really step back and not get involved in this. I can say from my chinuch, from my rabbeim in yeshiva, they never spoke ill of other Rosh Yeshivas, of other Rabbanim. They just didn't talk about them. And there's no need to. You don't have to talk about other people. Talk about Torah. Talk about, talk about what's important. There's no need to bash and to speak ill of others. It's not going to get us anywhere. We have to be so, so careful, especially during this period of time. They didn't show respect to each other. That doesn't mean that we have the right to disrespect them. If Madach, they were colleagues of each other, they were held accountable for not respecting each other. Kol Shekein, we that are not a colleague to these Gedolim, we are much lower than them. We have absolutely no permission to speak ill, to bash, to speak disrespectful of Gedolim. It's totally, totally uncalled for, and it needs to really come to a complete end. Okay, the Torah continues. Pasuk tells us, Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, he tells Moshe, Bekravai ekodesh v'apnei kol ha'mekodesh. The Rashi explains that he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, like Moshe Rabbeinu tells Aaron a very interesting statement. He says, "Aaron, he says, you know, I kind of had a feeling that something was going to happen in this Mishkan. I knew someone was going to die. And I figured either me or you. Now I see that they are greater than us." Which means like Moshe was kind of like saying, I kind of anticipated this was going to happen. I figured, oh, it was going to either be me, either me or you. So I saw someone ask a kashya, that's not anivus. How is that being an anav? I thought Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be an anav. So my first point out, this is Moshe Rabbeinu just being honest. Moshe Rabbeinu was not a fool. He didn't say to himself, I'm a loser. He knew who he was. He was very practical. He said, listen, I know what's going to happen. Either me or you are going to die. I thought it was either going to be one of us because we're both great people. That's not a contradiction to being an anav. Being an anav doesn't mean that you walk around saying, I'm a nobody. It means I'm honest. They say over a story with Pchatzkel Abramsky. Pchatzkel Abramsky, at the end of his life, lived in London. And he was called into a trial to be an expert witness. So the lawyer asks him, is your name Pchatzkel Abramsky? Yes. Are you one of the most expert Dayanim, Paiskim, you know, great leaders of London? He says, yes. So the lawyer says, with all due respect, Rabbi, I thought Jews are supposed to be modest. And you're not supposed to, he says, but I'm under oath. I gotta tell the truth. Pchatzkel Abramsky was saying the truth. He was a great godly, he was a great diner, he was a great poiser. That's the truth. But he never thought he was that because of him. He realized he was that because of a Kaddish Baruch. So here also, Moshe Rabbeinu was being very honest. He was not fooling himself about who he was. And then we come to perhaps one of the most famous psukim in all of, I think in all of Chumash, where Aaron says, the Torah tells us, Vayidoim Aaron. Aaron is silent. Aaron is watching what's taking place. He's watching his day in the sun. He's watching the day that he becomes inaugurated as the Kohen Gadol to work in the Mishkan. He's watching the day with the Jewish people and he himself obtained forgiveness for the egregious sin of the Chet Egel. And the same moment he watches his two sons,
being killed, dying in front of his own eyes. And what's Aaron's response? Vayidem Aaron, and Aaron is silent. The Medrash says that Aaron wasn't just silent because he had nothing to say. Aaron was consciously silent. Aaron had a lot to say. Says the Medrash, Aaron had a rebuttal. Aaron had a claim. Aaron had a defense. But he chose not to say it. What was Aaron's defense? The Medrash says Aaron's defense was, he could have told Hashem, it says in the Chumash, Vayhi b'yoyim hashmini yimol b'sar olosai. On the eighth day, you're supposed to give a bris to your son. It's a peladika Medrash. When I saw this Medrash, I was mamish ready to rip the hair out of my head. What is the Medrash talking about? What does bris mila have to do with Aaron defending why his son shouldn't die? And it really bothered me. And then I saw a beautiful pshat from Rav Moshe Bick. I mamish was about to get up and dance, but I realized you're not supposed to dance during Svira. Okay, I realized that afterwards, but it was such a beautiful pshat. And mamish was fantastic. Listen to this pshat from Rav Moshe Bick in this medrash. It's a medrash pliya, a very difficult medrash. That Aaron had a defense. His defense, his rebuttal was, it says in the Chumash, Rav Moshe Bick, unbelievably. Says Rav Moshe Bick, the Gemara says in Maseches Nida, we learned this in our Sunday morning shiur, that why does bris mila take place on the eighth day? So the Gemara says if bris mila would take place earlier, so that in the times of the Gemara, so a lady was a nida, she was tamei after she had the baby for 7 days, and then after the 7 days she'd go to the mikvah, she'd be tar. So the Gemara says in Maseches Nida, why would you make the mila on the seventh day where the parents are not happy? Because the guests are enjoying, but the parents, they're not allowed to touch each other, they're not allowed to enjoy. So the Torah says we made the bris mila on the eighth day so the parents can also enjoy. Says Rav Moshe Bick, this is what Moshe was saying, this is what Aaron was saying. He was saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the same way you pushed off Mila, so the parents should be able to be Tahar and enjoy the Simcha, push off the passing of my children so I can enjoy my day today. I want to be able to enjoy the Chanukah HaMishkan. I want to be able to enjoy this inauguration. So push it off. Just like you push off Mila a day, push this off a day. Mamish, a beautiful, beautiful pshat from Rav Moshe Bick to explain a very, very difficult medrash. I like to say over from the Klausenberger Rebbe, I say this over many times, I say it over on Pesach because we read it in the Haggadah, but it comes from this week's parasha. We recite in the Haggadah, B'damai Chayi, B'damai Chayi. We say it also at a bris mila. So most people understand that B'damai Chayi means through the blood we live, in reference to the blood of the Karban Pesach and the Dam Mila. But says the Klausenberger Rebbe, and only he could say this, says the Klausenberger Rebbe, who went through the Holocaust, lost 11 children and a wife, he says, no, the word B'damayich is from the Lashon Vayidim. Do you want to know how we survive tragedy? Do you want to know how we continue to live through all the pain and suffering? It's B'damayich. It's through being silent. B'damayich chayli. B'damayich chayi. We live, we survive through the D'mayich. Through the silence. Through the Vayidim Aaron. It's not the questioning, it's not the asking. Because if you're going to ask questions of how the Jewish people survived, you would not still be a God-fearing Jew. How do you explain all the terror and the loss of life throughout Jewish history? Also, during this period of time, was the First Crusade in 1096, where the Jews in northern Germany were brutally murdered by Christians. How do we explain that? How do we explain all of the next 1,000 years of Jewish history? Spanish Inquisition, Second Crusades, pogroms, Tach V'Tat, 1648-1649. And it goes on and on and on, and then we go to the Holocaust, and then we go to the Infatadas. How do we explain all of this? The answer is we don't explain it. B'demai chayi, says the Torah. Says the Baal HaGadah. B'demai chayi. By not asking questions. A Jew's job is not to ask questions. A Jew's job is to accept. And I just read a beautiful story that Mamish brings this point home. Reb Schwab had his brother came to visit him for a few days. And his brother went back home to where he lived. And on the plane, or in the airport, his brother had a massive heart attack and he died. And Reb Schwab came to identify the body. And he said the following line. It's so, so amazing. He says that when Hashem talks, we remain silent. When Hashem does something that we don't understand, we just keep quiet. Vayidim Aaron. Our job is to stay quiet. And again, we're living through a time, this pandemic, hopefully it's almost over, but we can't ignore the loss of life that took place this last year. When Hashem talks, we don't know why. why some people got sick and others didn't get sick, why some people got sick and got very sick and others didn't, why some people got sick and died and others didn't. We don't know. We don't know. We have no idea. All we know is b'demai chayi. You want to know why? We don't know why. We're just going to be quiet. We're not going to try to analyze it. We're not going to try to explain it. We're not going to try to justify it. We're going to just be quiet. As Reb Schwab coined, I think it's such a powerful line. When Hashem talks, we remain silent. And I just want to bring out one more point over here. The Pasuk tells us, a couple more points. If I guess the beauty of doing recording and not live is that I can go on, I guess, as long as I want. I will not go on that long, but there's still some major, major points that I think we need to perhaps touch upon. There's a pasuk later on, pasuk tazayin. Pasuk tells us that pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu got upset at Nadav Aviv. He got upset at Nadav Aviv because he told Nadav Aviv that they're supposed to eat, they're not supposed to be noig avelus, and they were not listening. Pasuk says, "Va'yiktsoif al Elazar va'alisamar b'nei Aaron hanosarim." He got mad on Elazar and Isamar, the remaining children of Aaron. Leimar saying, "Madu alaychatos b'tachatos? Why are you not eating the chatos?" So why are they called the remaining children of Aaron? So Rashi tells us that really Aaron should have lost all his children. He should have lost both his sons, all four sons. But b'schus tefila, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to save. And he only lost half of his children. Said the Ponovitcher Rav, who also went through the Holocaust and was saved, he said that whenever there's a a situation where there are people that are dying, and you survive, you're considered a noisar. You're considered a leftover. You are considered saved. And therefore, you have to realize you're a chrayas, that if others in your situation died, and you survived, it's not because you're special. It's because you have a specific task and a purpose to accomplish in this world. And I believe this is so important for all of us. People died last year. Many people died last year. We're all Naisarim. We're all left. Baruch Hashem, Hashem didn't take us. Especially those of us, myself included, who got sick. Oh, people say people who got sick, young people don't die. Young people died from COVID. Young healthy people died from COVID. We have no idea why those died and those didn't die. But we do know that if we survived, whether we got sick or didn't get sick, we are noisarim. We're left. And that means we have a purpose of why we're left in this world that we need to accomplish. Said the Ponovitcher Rav, we have to look at ourselves as noisarim. That means we have a purpose. We have a tafkid. We have more that we need to accomplish in this world. Hashem let us live because we have what to do. We have a specific purpose. Sometimes we don't know what it is. We have to figure out why were we lucky to be Noisarim while sadly others were not. And then the Torah tells us about an interesting conversation, disagreement between Moshe and Aaron. Moshe was upset that they did not eat from the carbon chatas. And Aaron said, no, Moshe, I mean, you forgot the halacha. They're not allowed to eat from the carbon that was the Rosh Chodesh carbon. They were allowed to eat from the special Chanukah Samizbeach carbon, but they did not have permission to eat from this one. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's response to his brother? Pasuk says, he tells his brother, "Vayitav be'enav." He likes what Aaron says. Hoida, he admits, "Veloy bosh loy meloy shemati." Says Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu could have just said, I never heard such halacha. He doesn't do that. He says, I heard it and I forgot it. You're right. He admits, points out the Mefarshim, what a leadership role over here. Admitting instead of blaming someone else. Moshe Rabbeinu could have easily said, I never heard it. Hashem never told me. No, he manned up. He said, no, you're right. I forgot. I made a mistake. But Rav Pam says there's another lesson over here that we need to live with. Rav Pam says, Moshe Rabbeinu got mad at Aaron's remaining children. Why? Because he had the facts wrong. So often in life, we get mad at people and we yell at them and we don't have the whole story. We don't have a full story. And it doesn't matter because once we start screaming and yelling, it's too late. The harsh words and the evil and painful words come out. And then when all the facts are laid out, you can't take those words back. Says Rav Pam, you have to be so careful. Before you start rebuking, before you give Musa Shmuzin, before you start yelling, make sure you have all the facts. Make sure you know the entire story. And this is that also reminds me of the famous story with Yaakov Kamenetsky as a child. Yaakov Kamenetsky one day came late to Cheder as a little boy. And the Rebbe was convinced that he stayed up late watching some Kayish event. And the Rebbe gave him a patch. And Yaakov was so upset. He said to himself, the Rebbe should have known. I'm not that type of kid. I don't lie. I don't go to these events. Why didn't the Rebbe know the whole story? Why didn't the Rebbe see who I am? So often in life, we need to look at the full picture before we start. And this is so guilty very often as parents. Right away, we run to blame a certain kid and we don't know the whole story. And we don't give the kid the chance. We don't give the kid the ability to defend himself. And it's really not right. Okay, there's so much more I wanted to talk about tonight. But I'm going to say, Belina, the Tumavarts. Tumavetlach, and I think that's going to have to be it for tonight. There's a pasuk later on when the Torah starts to talk about the animals that were allowed to eat and the animals that were not allowed to eat. So there's a pasuk where the Torah has an animal called a chasida. And Rashi says, what's the chasida? So Rashi says, chasida? He's called the chasida, she'ois chesed im chavar rosea b'mezainis. He does chesed with his friends with food. So Moshe Shtemberg asks, so it sounds like it's a good bird. It's a good animal. So why are we not allowed to eat it? And he says a kavaldige answer. He says, what's the lashon of Chazal? She'oisa chesed im chaveroiseha. He only does chesed with his friends. He only in his circle, his group, he does chesed with. But if you're out of the circle, you're out of the group, no chesed. Chesed is not only for the people that I like and the people that are like me. Chesed is for all Jews. I remember someone once called me up, shidduch information about a person. And they told me, he's nice to his friends. Aha. That means that people that are not his friends, he's not nice to. That's like the chasidah. I only do chesed with my friends. That's a mistake. We need to do chesed with all Jews. Whether they look like us, whether they act like us, whether they subscribe to the same shul and they have the same hashkafas achayim as us. No, it doesn't matter. You have to be able to do chesed with all Jews. Again, this is the time where we're working on interpersonal relationships. Ben Adam L'chaver, we need to be able to do chesed with people that are not exactly like us. They're not part of our group. They're not our chevra. We need to do chesed with them also. But I want to close with an idea that I saw from my friend, which really, really is very, very insightful. If you look in the psukim, when the Torah describes the non-kosher animals, so the Torah writes like this, in Perek Yud, it says you have the animal, Pasuk says like this, when it goes to all the different animals, so it says you have an animal, that's mafreses parsa. That's good. And what's a non-good animal? Says the pasuk. So you have an animal that's uparsa ena mafres. So that means in the present. Then you have the pasuk continues. It talks about uparsa lo yafres. That's talking about the split hooves. That's in the future. And then at the end it says uparsa lo hifrisa. That means in the past tense. Asks Rabbi Saul Salanta, why does the Torah say the same idea in three different tenses, past, future, and present? Says Rabbi Saul Salanta, before you can call someone Tomei, before you can passel someone, you have to know his past, his present, and his future. You have to look at the full person, understand where he's coming from, where he's been, and where he's heading, before you can call him a Tomei. We live in a society where we passel people up so fast. Boom, passel. You're treif, you're this, you're that. Look where he came from, look what he's up to, and look where he's going. And my friend says over a powerful story about a couple who were both Holocaust survivors. And when the husband came out of the Holocaust, he was no longer from because of what he saw in the Holocaust. And of course, we never judge people like that. We can't even begin to imagine the world that they saw. And the more you study the Holocaust, and I consider myself an amateur historian on the Holocaust, the more I study, the more I read, and the more I learn, I can't even begin to fathom what they went through. I can't even begin. You know, today we live in a society when it's a little too cold outside, all of a sudden we're always mentioned. And we go a couple hours without eating, we're all depressed. These Jews went years, months with no food, months with back-breaking labor. I can't even begin to imagine the world they lived through. But in any case, this couple, both husband and wife, survived the war. He came out no longer religious, and she came out, she was still religious. And she used to nudge him. Why don't you go to shul? Why don't you go daven? And he said, I don't want to go near a shul. I'm tired of that. I'm done with that. So every day his wife would try to pressure,
nudge him to go to shul. And one day she said to him, listen, every morning you come into the kitchen, you read the newspaper. Why don't you just take the newspaper and read it in the shul? Sit in the shul. Don't daven. Don't wait till and take the newspaper and sit in the back of the shul and read the newspaper. And he finally gave in to his wife. And he'd sit in the back of the shul every single day reading the newspaper. Reading the newspaper. Says Rabbi Frank, can you imagine if that would happen in our shul? You see a guy in the back reading the newspaper, you'd yell at him, you'd scream at him, you'd throw him out of the shul, you'd say, ah, God, what are you doing? This is our shul, you don't read the newspaper here. But do you know where he was coming from? Do you know what it took this fellow to come into the shul? Says Rabbi Frank, the people were so nice to him. They used to tell him, oh, this today we have tikkun, come, have a l'chaim, eat. And you know what happened, says Rabbi Frank? Not only did this fellow start coming to shul, to daven, to wear tefillin, he became the president of the shul. Because don't judge a person, don't call him tamei, until you know where he's been. What is his past? What's his present? And what's his future? Today we're so quick to ride people off. We have no idea the internal scars that people are carrying around with them. We don't know what people's childhood was like. We don't know the suffering and pain that they're carrying. Don't be so, Yisrael Salanter's idea, let's not be so quick to call people tamei until we know their past, until we know their present, and until we know their future. Have a wonderful Shabbos and be well.